Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everybody to the Wednesday edition of The Steve Jones Show. You know, all of us got together and they said, how do we name this thing? And it was really clever. Let's try The Steve Jones Show. Okay. The second choice was the Mark Lawrence Clam Bake. All right. We welcome everybody. Now, today is the kind of day that Kevin dreads. Although, come to think of it, you dread most of them.
What do I dread specifically?
What part of sports don't you like to talk about?
Oh, we're not going to talk about the business of it, are we?
We're going to talk money.
Oh,
I love when we talk money.
This was going to be a good day because I was going to get a chance to, you know, talk about Carlos Ruiz coming back. I mean, now we're going to talk money.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, come on. Try and get Donnie Collins on as well. Scranton Times Tribune. Get him on. Huh? Tomorrow, Josh Moyer, ESPN.com. Huh? You want to talk a little Penn State football, some of the issues of the day?
Okay, now Penn State football, all right. I'm excited about that part of it, yeah.
But we're also going to talk about, you know, about Title IX, NLRB, O'Bannon case. Huh?
Well, you and I talked about this yesterday. What are the male-only sports in college sports?
That have no
female counterpart or female opportunity.
Wrestling and football.
Correct. And you know that if you get rid of one sport because of finances, you're going to have to get rid of the equivalent on the women's side as well. Typically,
no, you don't.
Well, you don't. You don't have
that's
to.
That's not true. That's not true.
I've heard differently. That's why I'm glad that you mentioned
that.
That is not true.
That is not true. You can get rid of as many male sports as you want.
You just can't add any without adding a. Is that correct?
Yes, you cannot add a men's sport without finding a female match to it of some sort. For example, when Penn State added men's ice hockey, Penn State then had to add a women's sport for numbers.
All right.
Now, Penn State did not necessarily have to add women's ice hockey. They did not have to do that. They could have added, one of the options they discussed was women's rugby, which has a rather large number of participants. And if you add women's rugby, for example, you know, that would balance off the new number of male participants that come from men's hockey. See, it's about participation. It's not about
equaling the sport.
Right. And it doesn't matter to them if you have 70% female athletes on campus to 30% male. That doesn't matter. But you cannot have 70% male to 30% female. You just can't. It's got to be there's no hard and fast number. But if everything is within the 45 to 55% range one way or the other, they're usually comfortable with it.
Well, yesterday we were talking about, you know, the O'Bannon case and if you have to pay athletes to play now. You know, you're going to have to pay it up and down in every sport, and that means that probably some sports are going to get cut. So let's look at it from the other side. If they have to cut a female sport because the money isn't there, do they have to cut a male sport as well to keep the balance for Title IX?
Of course they do. course they do. You have to get rid of it. First of all, there are no male sports outside of football and men's basketball that make money.
Right.
Okay? Again, let's take wrestling as an example.
Which, by the way, Steve, I think would be the most vulnerable in this situation.
Well, there are a lot of vulnerable ones. Men's gymnastics is highly vulnerable. There are 17 men's gymnastics programs in the country. Men's volleyball is extremely vulnerable. Okay, believe it or not, baseball becomes vulnerable. But let's take, for example, wrestling. Penn State is the single most successful wrestling program in the country. They are the Iowa of the new millennium. They have won 4 consecutive national championships. Every dual meet in Rec Hall is sold out. The tickets at the moment are priced appropriate to get people into the arena. But when you try to tell wrestling fans that they are running a massive deficit, they look at you like you are from Mars. Well, that's impossible. Like all the time, everything's sold out. Irrelevant. Those tickets don't cover the cost of a wrestling program. The fact that it's sold out is awesome. I would rather have, okay, $1 tickets and a sellout than price them $30, $40 and try to somehow make up the deficit, because you're not going to get the crowd at $40 a ticket. I'd rather have them be a dollar and have the place sold out so that the wrestlers are getting an awesome crowd, because you're going to lose money anyway. So since you're going to lose money anyway, but you can make up for it with your football and men's basketball money. And that's the other part. They can't believe men's basketball makes money and wrestling doesn't. We sell out. We sell out. Stop the we stuff, okay? Stop it. Okay? It's all Penn State. Be happy that men's basketball makes money. Be thrilled that men's basketball makes money. I mean, really, be thrilled with it. Why? It's helping to pay for your sport. It doesn't make your sport any less or more than the other sport. But be happy there's a revenue stream of football and men's basketball profit so that you can look at a wrestling program and say, I don't care if they lose over $1 million a year, which they do, but I don't care that they do. I'm just glad we have it, that the ticket prices are properly put out there so we can go watch it and enjoy it and be the best in the nation. That should be your attitude. Be thrilled that you have a men's basketball program that makes $5.2 million. Be thrilled. Because guess what? Some of the profits making sure that your program stays alive. That's how the collegiate model works. I want a profit, and I want successful and profitable field and watching a lacrosse game. I love going to Rec Hall and the passion, the excitement, the all-out fervor of a wrestling crowd at Penn State. It's the best in the nation. There's no better wrestling atmosphere than in Rec Hall. And they are given, and not only that, Cale's team puts on a show because they're aggressive, flamboyant, tremendous to watch, entertaining. I love watching Russ Rose's women's volleyball team. Athletic, energetic, skilled. The best in the country. And I'm glad that Russ and Cale have the resources so they can recruit and have the best programs in the country. That Cale is told, hey, look, you can go to Boston University and wrestle. You can go out to Utah and wrestle. You can go anywhere you want to wrestle. Okay? That Russ can take his team anywhere with any kind of competition so that when the NCAAs come around, they're ready. Okay? That happens because whatever funds that they bring in on a Friday night, Saturday night women's volleyball or a Saturday, Sunday in wrestling, they get to keep, and guess what? Because of the profits from football and men's basketball, a little bit from those two go to make up for it, so you're just fine. Go wrestle the best in the country. We've got the revenue to do it. So I don't want sports cut. Penn State is not going to drop wrestling. All right, let's start with that. All right, they're not going to drop that. It's not going to happen. And then the other Big Ten schools probably aren't going to either. The problem you have in the sport of wrestling is outside of the Big Ten, who's going to drop it. Remember, the SEC has, except for Missouri, who wrestles in the Mid-American Conference, there are no wrestling teams in the SEC. It is a non-sport. Okay? They don't care. Who else is going to drop it? The numbers keep going down. I know we keep hearing over and over. Last year when we had the wrestling problem with the Olympics, we were talking about the popularity of it around the world and so forth. But collegiately, you know how many wrestling teams are in the country right now in Division One?
I'm gonna guess 15.
Oh, no. It's 14 in the Big Ten.
Oh, you said around the country. I was thinking in the league. Kind of, sorry.
Yeah, there's four. All 14 schools have wrestling in the Big Ten.
I was thinking in the Big Ten.
But I'm talking about the entire. There's 354 men's basketball programs in the country. How many wrestling programs are there in Division One?
276.
Surprised?
And let me guess, most of them are east of the Mississippi.
Yes, they are. East and north. Again, remember, Alabama, Florida, Georgia. No, there are no wrestling programs. Missouri wrestles in the Mid-American. They're the only SEC school that has wrestling, to my knowledge. That's it. University of Texas. Boy, that's some great wrestling in Texas. When Boston University dropped the sport, they fell from 77 to 76. See, that's where it becomes vulnerable. If things change, hey, let's start paying football and men's basketball player, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there are too many people that sit in these seats that don't know how the system, who actually benefits from the system. Why? Because they sit in these seats and they don't actually go to any events. You got to get your hands dirty. You got to get out there. You got to. Kevin's at wrestling matches on the high school level. Kevin's at high school football, high school basketball. Right? He's gone to girls' basketball games. He's talked about lacrosse being an up-and-coming sport. He's out there. He sees it. It's in front of him. He doesn't sit in a chair, go home, and then have three screens in front of him and go, hey, what's on tonight? Look, the Yankees are on. No, we're going to talk about college sports today. All I know is I see full stadiums in college football and men's basketball. I actually heard a guy on ESPN the other day say, hey, to the other sports, hey. You don't make it, you don't make it. That's exactly what he said. If you don't make it, you don't make the cut, you're out. Really? That's your attitude. I would like him to sit down with the 712 student athletes who are not in football and men's basketball and explain to them, hey, by the way, catch as catch can, you're all out. Why don't you go in there and you make that speech, sport? Love to see it. In fact, I would actually pay to see that speech made by that guy. I'd also like to sit in the back of the room and watch him attempt to exit. Their college sports needs to be tweaked and done in such a way where it benefits the student athlete. There's no question about it. Okay? But making it semi-professional? No. The only true amateurs today in college sports are called walk-ons. They're the only true amateurs.
Welcome While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Woods 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Oh, we get to the segment of the show every month. Kevin just abhors, hates. It's the part where we let Kevin know that it's a business.
Hate is such a strong word, though. And
it what it does is it takes, you have this balloon that's your fantasy balloon of sports.
Yes.
Tony is the pin to the balloon.
That is also true. That is very accurate.
Yeah. I love talking to Tony. Some good stuff. You, on the other hand, it ruins your image.
Tony's a great guy, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't have any problem with Tony, you know, personally. It's just...
He speaks highly of you.
I'm glad.
All right. Tony, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good to be back.
Tony, let's talk about an interesting dynamic in college football and soccer. The Big 12 sent representatives to see Sporting Kansas City and their subsidiary, Sporting Innovations, which markets them. The SEC has sent several teams, Florida among them, to Sporting Kansas City and also Sporting Innovations. The average age of a Sporting Kansas City fan is 29. That's close enough to college age. So what are things that they could pick up from Sporting Innovations and Sporting Kansas City that can help a college program market?
You know, it's interesting. The college programs have, there's a large shift happening there, and it's still happening both ways, as we've discussed, where they're still trying to find that delicate balance between keeping the core customer that creates the ambiance, which is a student, and maximizing the corporate dollar. As you guys have seen with Michigan, that's gone backwards. They've tried to maximize the corporate dollar too much, and the college attendee is just not coming anymore. At USC here, they're just now starting to sell new field level suite that they just built and, you know, redid part of the stadium. And that again is going kind of the other direction of where these meetings that you're discussing are going, where the Big 12 and the SEC are starting to go to the MLS and say, you're really seeing significant attendance growth, especially in the younger demographic. Not just, I mean, the average age is 29, but they're doing a very, very good job with the 13 to 19-year-old demographic, better than almost anybody, including the NFL. And what they're trying to do is figure out what's happening at these events that's creating the ambiance to bring in that consumer. Because that consumer begets an ambiance that brings in the expensive consumer, right? The person who is, you know, 45, 50, 60, has a large checkbook, isn't going to stand out in the rain, but wants to go and watch the game with people who are fanatical enough to stand out in the rain and create a tremendous ambiance.
You deal with all kinds of ticket holders. Give me a profile difference between the corporate partner that wants to go and a student body that wants to go. What are the differences that a marketing group needs to think of with each group?
It is totally different when it comes to ambiance and experience. You have a lot more fanaticism with the youth, and the youth that wants to be tied into the event. They want to be a part of the event, right? They want the action to somewhat center around the crowd noise and the way the crowd chants together and the way they accessorize the merchandise, which is very well thought out in the MLS. They all look the same, act the same, dance the same. It's become kind of like this party. And that's really great for the 15 to 30-year-old. The 45 to 55-year-old wants to see that experience. They want to be near it. They kind of want to take a part of it, but I think they all know that they're not a part of that and they're going to need to buy their way in. And so for that reason, you see, you know, especially with the higher level events, that there's a lot, there's a large variance between the ability to pay to get in and what the value is to the customer. You know, when I left StubHub many, many years ago, the average buyer was four tickets for about $70, and that was the entire order. The average corporate consumer buys four tickets for $1,062. So they're looking for very different experiences. It's almost like the corporate guys want to go to the zoo and see the animals, but they don't want to be in with the animals.
Wow, interesting. All right, let's keep it on the student part here for a moment, because you brought up Michigan. Michigan's 6,000 tickets short on selling out their allotment.
What a mess.
There is a school of thought that if you give... if you have a great cell phone experience, a great Instagram experience, and a social media experience, that you'll draw them in. Right, wrong, or in between?
That's not the problem at Michigan. The problem at Michigan is very common sense based. It's something we've been talking about for 10 years, and it's happening across the entire sports market right now, is you have now, or are we looking at the lifetime value of a customer? And that's something that's lost in sports. You know, when you're in the technology markets and regular businesses, you look at like a Steve or you look at a Tony and you say, what is the lifetime value of this person and how do I get as much as I can out of them over that course? Which doesn't necessarily mean selling Steve Jones a season ticket for 2 years. It might mean selling him a quarter season for the next 15 years. What Michigan's done is they've said, let's sacrifice the long-term brand for a short-term gain. What that has meant has been pushing those students that have a great lifetime value into the worst seats in the building. And that's the number one issue. I mean, in all of those articles they write about, in all of those studies, those kids have the worst seats in the building, and it's not close. USC's done the same thing out here. They do the same thing in the SEC, so they can give 100 tickets to ESPN, who doesn't care where they go. That's the core problem, is not only are you saying, you know, the experience and everything, that's very important. Can I get as much of an experience as I'm getting at the event? But what's more important is the fact that you've already made them second-class citizens before they've even entered the building.
Huge problem. Okay.
Huge problem. And so I don't know if you saw the Jaguars release today. The Jacksonville Jaguars are throwing around ideas such as being able to tailgate yourself in the building, right? Having grills available where you can buy meat and cook it yourself in the building. They have video boards that are larger than Jerry Jones's. They have swimming pools with bottle service. They have a fantasy football lounge. They're basically saying, look, we're going to try to bring your house here, and I'm not sure that's the best approach.
Right. They cabanas. They're putting cabanas in as well.
I guess in Jacksonville, right? I expect out of Las Vegas, Los Angeles, or New York before I'd expect it out of Jacksonville or Miami. But, hey, we'll see how it goes.
Let's take it home for you now for a moment. And the Dodgers, let's talk about the television problem the Dodgers are having right now. Some have said this is a defining moment. Your thoughts on the Dodger television problem, which is close to home for you?
Hey, I love it because I'm a San Francisco Giants fan living in Los Angeles, so I don't have to watch the Blue play their games. But this is the defining moment when it comes to network carriage rights, when it comes to enabling a brand across the globe. You know, we've seen other people blink. We went through the same thing here in Southern California with the Los Angeles Lakers, where the first half of the season that they had Howard, Nash, and Kobe, it wasn't on TV for most carriers. It was only the Time Warner Cable issue. I think what this is really going to do is shake up what's happening with sports and sports carriage rights across the board, because the reality is when you're paying that cable bill, the majority of it is going to ESPN. It is going to these rights holders, because we're starting to see with the, you know, prevalence of Netflix, or the prevalence of the ability to watch whatever you want, whenever you want it, a live event hasn't become a victim to that, which has driven up the values of the carriage rights for the Dodgers, for the Pac-12 network, which has been incredibly successful, for the soon-to-be-available on Comcast SEC network. And all of these leagues and teams are starting to realize that, look, Modern Family is a fun show. We all like watching it. We can watch it all week long. We don't miss anything.
Right.
But I got to see Penn State play Michigan when it happens, or when I go to the bar in an hour, I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to partake in the discussion.
Exactly, and that's why I think this is. I've looked at this as the line in the sand that's going to be prevalent across every market, depending on how it turns out.
I think they're not going to blink, and I think it's the new future of carriage rights, because I wouldn't blink if I were them.
Right. Amazing.
I mean, the reality is this is a market-driven, we're supposedly a capitalistic market-driven market, and the reality is if this has that value, which we believe it does, then we are going to hold to that value. And I think what this is going to do, and I'm very curious, you know, your thoughts on it are, I think this is going to give a ton of power to the Big 12, to the SEC, to the Pac-12, and even to, like, the Texas Longhorns, who have their own network.
Right.
It's just going to make the beast even bigger.
I think, yeah, the Big 10 is the next major contract to be negotiated. Everybody in college sports has negotiated their contract except for the Big 10, and they're two
yep.
years away. So about a year from now is when they're really going to kick in the negotiations.
And they pioneered this whole thing.
Yes, they pioneered the whole thing. And the thought process is that in the industry, and I'm not telling you anything because you know, that each Big Ten school could net $44.5 million per if it turns out right.
And that's great for the health of the league. Right, I think they're all looking at this and saying, let's have a rising tide lift all boats. It's what they do in the English Premier League. It's what they do in
yep.
the NFL. It's the ability to pour a ton of money into a conference so that it can then be dispersed into schools, and you can see schools that maybe weren't, you know, traditional superpowers also rise along with the superpowers. Penn State will get bigger and stronger, but so will Northwestern.
Right, because it's all doled out equally, and that's
mm-hmm.
socialism works in sports. I mean, that's taking the free market and then making it work internally. So
it does. You create parity. I mean, look, it's the old joke they always make about baseball, right? The Yankees have to play somebody.
Yeah.
So that somebody has to have some kind of value, or else yeah. you're just rolling out the Washington Generals every week.
Right. Well, see, that's always been my point about local TV rights, where Major League Baseball is a little bit behind in the times. A percentage of local TV rights should be put into a pool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
it's more compelling to have good teams yeah. besides just Los Angeles and New York and Boston.
Right. Yeah, because we want San Francisco and Boston to be really good, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want the Giants in there, exactly.
Tony and I have an agenda outside of New York and Los Angeles. Now let's talk. You mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville, of course, has a football team. They've hosted a Super Bowl. Los Angeles does not have a pro football team. You mentioned USC. Talk about the NFL saying, the heck with this, we'll build the stadium. What are you hearing out there about that?
So the old joke is that L.A. does have a professional team where we pay all the players very well, and that is the USC Trojans.
I did the Rose Bowl, Tony. I did that game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Some of the best played football players in the country are there.
Yeah.
But and I'm an alum, so I'm allowed to joke about that. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's always kind of been the ability to leverage Los Angeles against all of the other markets into forcing a stadium, which is the same thing we're seeing with Seattle and the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the day finally does come that the NFL decides they want to come in, the lawsuits and the infighting that's going to happen around it and the power brokers that are in this area that maybe aren't familiar to those outside of the area are going to create space. The reality is you have multi-billionaires like Ed Roski and, you know, the AEG group and Philip Anschutz and everybody's fighting over where they want to put the team. You know, L.A. sprawled out. It's not like a lot of other cities where there's a city center. You know, Roski wants to put it out in the city of industry, which is about, you know, an hour drive from where I am, and I'm right outside the city. You know, AEG wants to put it downtown. Everybody's saying, well, traffic is already the worst on the planet downtown. Now you're going to build a football stadium. So do I think, you know, common sense says there should be a team here tomorrow. I don't think it's coming in the next 5 years.
Mm. What's interesting, though, is I think that now that Minnesota is in the process, and I've already, you know, I walked over to the site where they were knocking the Metrodome down.
And
watched.
They've already sold all their PSL down.
Yeah, that was, to me, that was one of the last leverage sites in the country, because Minnesota had talked about the, you know, they dangled the L.A. thing. Almost everybody's built the stadium now.
Everybody's built the stadium, and everybody's doing incredibly well.
Yeah.
So, you know, the argument that may finally win the day is the league has come out and said we want 18-game seasons, right? And that's never going to happen. With player player health issues, it's just never going to happen. So how do you expand that? Well, you expand the market. You expand to two more teams. It creates more jobs, so the union's not going to fight you. And you just add another bye week. So now you're not playing an 18-game season, but theoretically by TV you are, right? You have more off days for specific divisions, and now you have more football for a longer period of time.
Can I go back to the Dodger thing for a moment? Has TV, the lack of TV exposure affected attendance? Because remember the old argument in the 60s and 70s, we don't want to televise it because people won't go.
The blackout rule. Oh, yeah. I grew up in Northern California where, you know, all the football games are blacked out for the Raiders.
Does it make a difference?
Pretty much every year.
Does it make a difference in terms of attendance?
No. Not at all.
I think it actually helps attendance because you get to see the team.
Yeah. Look, the reality is where the NFL is up to speed, where MLB is behind, where the teams really need to understand and what, you know, old farts like you and I are trying to keep up with is the reality that you still have to look at the lifetime value of a customer. And as draconian as it is and as frightening as it is, you've got to look at a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and say, what is the lifetime value of this middle-class 10-year-old, right? How am I going to expose this to my league? Not because the reality is right now they're looking at it saying, how do I get the 10-year-old to go tell their dad they want to go to the game? What they really need to be looking at, what the NBA is doing a good job, is they need to be looking at the 10-year-old and saying, how do I make sure that when this 10-year-old is 20, they are the fanatical fan that waits in line, buys the $20 ticket, and allows me to sell more for the corporation. Then when they're 35, they go buy more expensive stuff, and when they're 50 and 60, they're sitting on the field level.
Right?
That's how they need to be looking at this. And the reality is you got to have coverage to do that. You got to make it available, which is why baseball not having their stuff online is insanity. It is just absolute insanity.
We've passed the start of the fiscal year, so you've done a lot of work that you are deep into 15 and probably partially working into 16 in your business right now.
Oh, yeah.
What into 15 and into early 16 through, let's say fiscal year June 30th, 2016, that's probably about how deep you're working, if I'm guessing right.
Yep, already looking at 16 now, yep.
Yeah. What is working and makes sense for the corporate customer, and what is not making sense anymore for the corporate customer?
Well, it's been interesting to see. The luxury suites are a real problem for everybody on the team side. They're starting to cut them out across the board, and they're trying to do it without creating a whole lot of noise about it. The TD Garden has knocked out 8 suites. Texas just knocked out 12. The Seattle Mariners knocked out 10 suites. Staples Center converted some stuff. That's becoming the norm. Is, you know, the days of selling somebody a 20-person box are dying, and they're being replaced with the ability to buy, you know, 2 season tickets that are premium level, so to speak. They come with food and booze and all that stuff for a shorter period of time. We're going to see a rather tectonic shift here over the next 2 years. StubHub's been in the news a lot lately. They have not been seeing the profitability they would like to see, which is starting to consolidate back to the teams who are starting to get more control over who's buying what in the dynamic pricing world. And this is all a good thing for the fan. So, you know, that was a whole bunch of, you know, industry hullabaloo. What's basically happening is more dynamic pricing, more ability to buy just what you want as opposed to buying a bunch of stuff you don't want just to get what you want, and a commoditization of the sports industry. So companies know this. They're starting to come back and say, I don't want a luxury suite anymore. I want what's called a ticket bank. These are very common, where I have the ability to buy up to 8 tickets per game for every game of the year up until I get to, you know, 600 tickets and then I'm done. So that's where this is going. And what that's allowing for is the common fan to have access to tickets that were basically locked up in a drawer somewhere at a company that weren't being used because that company bought them so they could get the Lady Gaga show next month.
Wow.
Big change. Big changes are coming. 2016 is going to be nowhere close to where we are now.
That's a huge change, but it's a huge change in favor of the average to high average fan.
Absolutely. We're going that direction where, you know, what we've seen here so far, the genius of StubHub was they created a central place, right? A lot of fans go there now because they don't care if the ticket comes from Ticketmaster or Tickets.com or Penn State or whoever else. Right. I just want the ticket. Right. And you're giving me one place where I can go get this ticket where I like. And they really disrupted the market, said this is how people buy now. And so Ticketmaster and the teams are starting to realize, okay, this is how the people buy now. So we need to change the way we're doing our metrics. We need to change selling season tickets. We need to change the way we're offering things out there. And all of these things roll into what we started with, where we need to make sure that people are getting what they need and the ambiance they need, and that includes putting the college students on the 50-yard line where they belong.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for the time.
Yeah, looking forward to coming back.
And you will be back. I can guarantee you that.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I like his idea of putting the students back on the 50-yard line. If I'm a student, I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, and close. I'd say close. I do like the fact that, like, the freshman section, sophomores, like, extend into the end zone area, because I think they make a difference in the game there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Juniors and seniors bring them further out. And in basketball, you have got to put the students behind the benches.
Oh, it's behind the benches. See, I thought you were going to say behind the basket.
No, behind the benches. Okay, behind the. Guess what? When they take that shot in that sideline, which is the most, that's the shot you see all the time, and they're going up and down, and they can see the bench, and they can see the coach and the whole thing. That's your money shot.
Well,
right there.
You know what? You're right, because that I see that a lot at the high school level, because that's where the student sections are, is right there on the sideline.
Put them right behind the benches, not opposite the benches. You got to put them behind the bench. Okay, this is the trend I've been seeing in college basketball over the place. Ohio State, Michigan, Nebraska. All right, they're putting their students. Maryland. They're putting their students behind the bench. Oh, it's incredible. I'm talking like both benches. They're heckling the one bench and they're loving the other one. Okay? It is absolutely the way to go. And I'm sincerely hoping that Penn State makes that change, and hopefully the season ticket holders that have been in those spots understand that. I know they had a meeting about it, and one person was adamantly, no, this is my connection to the players. Jeez, go to the social afterward. You know, I'm trying to do things that look good on TV. All right? There's a big picture here. You got to be able to now, today, see the big picture. Tony's right. Okay, I want my games on TV or listen to on the radio. Why? Because my 12-year-old gets into it, and guess what? My 12-year-old becomes 20 and buys, and then gets into it, and then buys when he's 30 or 40. Hey, that's why you do it, so you get them interested. Dad, take me to a game. And then you become the one that buys later. When I was a kid, my grandfather took me to Fenway Park. When I got to be 17, and I was making a little bit of money. I was working for my dad, welding and things like that, right? I took my grandfather to the game. It meant a lot to me that I bought the tickets because Grampy bought for me all those years. That's how you get them interested. All right, I know the top of the hour is coming up. Kevin, right now, is in sports depression. We were talking cash. Very little TMZ in that interview. I apologize, Kevin.
Oh, that's all right. You'll make it up to me later. Then again, maybe not.
Come on. Get into it. Don't you love when your kid says, Dad, take me to a game? And you go out there and you get the Xbox. All right.
It's an affordable way to... Well, actually, you know what? Even that's not getting as affordable.
We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury.
I feel your frustration. I can feel it.
My frustration about what?
Just with me, in general.
Oh, that's something that it's... I don't feel alone. I think the audience shares.
Feel the love. Feel the love.
Only here, brother. Only here. Next hour, Kevin announces his retirement.
That was a really loud cheer.